Please be advised this podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature. It's not appropriate for children. Before we start this week's episode, which is a pretty emotional one actually, I need to give a shout out to some of our wonderful patrons. Alexa Munoz Aquino, that is a beautiful name, Alexa. Gabby Ma, Megan Anderson, Scott Woolger, Tina Georgitsis, beautiful name, Tara Hodges, Kat Young, Elizabeth Mason, Stuart Jones, Heidi Butcher, Catherine Harris, Helen Carr, Karen Walker, Julie Welsh, Beck Lay, Cassie MJ, Hannah Rivett, Cassandra Henderson, Beth Borsey, Kelly Nealon, Kitty Hughes. Oh no, actually that's a post from you, Kitty, isn't it? Yes, and I do remember what that's about and I will get back to you about that. Thank you to everybody who has signed up on our Patreon page, patreon.com/austtruecrimepod, A-U-S-T, True Crime Pod, and that's where you can go and sign up to be a patron. We have lots of stuff going on there. We have conversations about stuff, questions. We can ask you sort of, you know, what you're into, what you like more of and less of. We're going to try and get a live chat, ask us anything thing going with Narelle, because we know everyone wants more of Narelle. That's what everyone's answer is to what do you want more of, which is awesome. And also we have some free tickets. We've got a ticket giveaway coming up to see the serial killer whisperer herself, Amanda Howard, live. Those tickets will be going out to our patrons. So please come along and get involved. Patreon.com/AustTrueCrimePod. Pretty soon we'll have an update with our lovely friend Greg. I emailed him. I said, Greg, can you please come and give us an update so women will stop stopping me in the street and asking me if you're okay? He was our man we spoke to recently who'd just been released from prison. And we've had such a lovely response to him, and he's stoked to know that everyone wants to know if he's okay. So he'll be back shortly with an update just for patrons. So that's a good reason to sign up. Okay, let's get on with this week's show.
And then Sunday was sort of like fairly normal, and we sort of came home and then, you know, watched Idol on TV. And I fell asleep on the lounge, you know, watching sort of TV, and woke up a little while later and he wasn't home. So I sent him a text and said, you know, where are you, whatever. And I didn't really worry about it too much because he doesn't work on Mondays.
Yeah.
And he's got, you know, a group of friends that he, you know, goes out with.
Mm-hmm. What happened on Sunday? Which one did you wake up?
That's 44-year-old Michael Atkins lying to police at Miranda Station in Sydney on the 27th of September 2007. His Sunday hadn't been in any way normal. He hadn't watched Idol with his 20-year-old boyfriend Matthew the previous Sunday night, because by the time that week's episode of Australian Idol had started, Matthew Leveson was dead, and Atkins knew it.
I think just had some juice. And
did Matthew eat?
No.
And then what happened?
We just sort of spent like a lazy day, so you know, just sat around the unit. And
did you leave the unit at all?
I think once or twice.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
So from the time you went to sleep at 5 to the time you woke up at 2, obviously you were in the unit the whole time?
Yep.
And Matthew?
Yeah, I assume so.
To your knowledge?
To my knowledge.
You didn't leave?
Yeah.
And was it the first time you left the unit about 5 o'clock?
Yeah, I think
on
so.
Sunday? To go for a walk down the block?
Yep.
Did you buy anything?
Don't think so.
Matthew's friends and family had no idea he was even missing for several days after his last visit to Sydney's Arc nightclub. In fact, his brother was partying with him on that fateful night, and noticed nothing out of the ordinary when they last bumped into each other on the stairs in the early hours. It would take years for the details of Matt's final moments to unravel, although the full truth will likely never be known, because Atkins is not only free, but he's unencumbered by any conviction related to Matt's death. Matt's parents are Faye and Mark Leveson, and their story is about as horrifying as it gets. Their beautiful son is just 20 years old when he disappears with a controlling, secretive older man into a world they don't understand, and he never returns. They spend the following decade fighting through a justice system that for some reason treats them like adversaries. And when they're not dealing with callous coppers and terrifying lawyers, they're searching bushland, literally with their bare hands, for their son's remains. And sometimes having to fend off so-called helpers with agendas of their own. After you hear this story, you have to wonder how anyone could survive it, and yet, here they are. That's the kind of people Faye and Mark Leveson are. And no doubt, it's the kind of person their son Matthew would have grown to be. So we started off by talking about him as he was, as a little boy, their little Matthew.
Oh, he was a little vibrant, little devil. He was,
Little princess. We knew he was gay before he came out.
It was
a shock.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't overtly, but yes. The way he used to run, and he'd like to be hanging around with the girls and do it. We knew he was gay. And I mean, he was a little devil. He was, he liked experimenting with things. I remember one day he was about five, he mixed up water and perfume and dishwashing liquid in a jar.
Yeah.
And I was cleaning and I thought, where's Matt? He's gone quiet.
Potions, my kids call it.
Yeah, potions, yes. Anyway, I walked out to the billiard room and he's got this extension lead plugged in and turned on. He's got a toothbrush and he's putting it across the prongs and it's arcing.
Oh my God.
Thank God we had a clipsa switch, but it never tripped the clipsa switch. Yeah. And he's having the fun of, what the devil? Oh, I'm just experimenting, Mum.
Well, when did he come out? When did he know he was gay?
Well, I think he's known for a long time.
Yeah.
And he had a girlfriend in year 10, who's we call our daughter now.
They broke up bitterly for about a week, and they're just soulmates. And now after that, they're best of friends and stay that way.
And he went they had their HSC the day before it was due to begin. He tied up his room and he'd gone to his partner's place, his then boyfriend's place.
Before Atkins.
And who was a beautiful guy, a really, really lovely guy. And then he texted me, Mum, I've left a note on my desk. My heart sank. I thought, oh my God, he's been so good. I didn't think the pressure was getting, he's gone to top himself. That's my first reaction.
Yeah.
And anyway, I read it. And it's this lengthy letter, and Matt was never very good at English, and I think his partner had helped him write it because it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
From the heart, it was
Matt's words, but it was refined a little. And anyway,
basically, Mum, Dad, I'm gay. Was that all? That's all it is.
Yeah, thank you for sending me to the school. I've got really lovely friends. They've supported me. They've known, but I feel I've got to get this off my chest before I can do the HSC. So I just rang them, get your butt home. Doesn't matter.
Right. Well, we go back and said, mate, doesn't change a thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't change who they are. If they had, if they were a bad person inside, they'd still be. If they were a beautiful person, which we're biased, yes, Matty was. He was a vibrant young man. It didn't change him.
Yeah.
He was still our son. We still loved him just as much. But my main concern was that the homophobes out there would pick on him. And I always said to him every time he went out, Matt, I'm scared. I'm going to find you dead in a gutter.
So when do you think he started partying, in inverted commas?
Well, I think it was when we didn't know that he'd been speaking to Atkins because online, and it wasn't until the inquest, the first lot of police didn't find this conversation between Atkins and Maddie. So he'd been grooming him online about drugs.
So was Maddie still with this lovely boyfriend when they started communicating?
I think so, and I think that's what broke them up. I don't know. He never spoke to us why he broke up with his...
And his boyfriend hasn't spoken to you about...
No, I wouldn't ask them. That's personal. That's between them,
okay.
You know. And to me, that's very, very personal. Okay. And so, because we'd brought them all up anti-drugs, and they were. Now we know a lot more. I mean, God, through the trial and through everything, we've learnt so much that we were oblivious to. And people, I don't condone the drug taking by any means, but it seems to be like in that scene, and it's even with the young, it's like a rite of passage. And unfortunately, Maddie didn't make it out the other side, but that wasn't because of the drugs. That was because of a monster, an it. All the others, they've come out the other side and beautiful, beautiful people. I mean, Matt's friends have stayed by us. They've had to air their dirty laundry and, you know, my heart breaks for them.
Matt's friends, their loyalty is unbelievable. What they've gone through on behalf of Matt and how they're stuck by Matt and us, we'll never, ever forget.
And thanks would never, ever be enough. Mm. And, I mean, we had one gay son. We've got about 10 now.
Yeah. So talk to me about the grooming. How was that? Was that at Facebook or something like that?
No, that was through, I think it was MSN.
But this is pre-Facebook.
Okay.
Was it on MySpace?
He hooked up with him on Manhunt or something.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know whether it was messaging. Those, but at the inquest, there was all these questions, and he goes, I'm a drug virgin with Maddie. And because he said, well, what does this do? And Atkins is actually telling him what different drugs do.
Yeah.
So that wasn't in the trial. That was never found. It was.
So Maddie's a beautiful young gay guy, and Atkins is an older gay guy, and he's hunting the internet for young gay guys.
We call him a sexual predator.
So eventually, after the online chat, they end up going out together. Matt breaks up with his lovely boyfriend and ends up in a relationship with this guy.
See, what had happened to 12 months previous in the August, Maddie did go missing.
Overnight.
And we didn't know his friends. He'd been out with his friends. They'd been to ARC. We didn't know he'd been to ARC until that day when he didn't come home. And work had rang me up early in the morning. Matt hasn't turned up for his shift.
And he loved his job.
He loved his job, and he was always the go-to person. If somebody didn't turn up from the shift, because we didn't live far from where he worked, his bag turned up on our front doorstep, and we did the ring around trying to find Matt. And then Rachel was ringing around, and one of his mates said, we saw him at ARC. He was meeting a Mike, and nobody knew his last name. Anyway, so the police, they hunted around. They said, we worked at the Sus Club. So they rang the Sus Club, and they subcontracted out to the security company.
The Sus Club is the Sutherland United Services Club, which has changed its name. It's in Sutherland. He was a guard there.
Who was?
Mike Atkins. He was a bouncer.
Right.
So anyway, they finally got on this contracting company who weren't going to give them the name, and then the police pressured them, and they gave Michael Atkins' name. 2 o'clock in the morning, they got a phone call from Maddie, really angry. Why'd you ring the police? They want me to go down to the station. I said, I'm not going. I said, Matt, you were missing. Nobody knew where you were. I said, we thought something had. I'm at Emma's place. I said, well, why didn't you ring? They're doing renovations, and there's no phone line.
His phone's flat.
And I said, you've got to go to the police. No, I'm not going. I said, well, if you don't go to the police station, I said, you're still a missing person. Anyway, that apparently caused a bit of angst between them, and he ended up, because the police told us if he went to the police station, they didn't have to tell us where he was, just that he was safe, which they did. And Matt didn't come home after that. He phoned us about a day later to say he was staying in a friend's place.
And that was Atkins.
He never told us it was Atkins for a while. He said he's moving in with a friend, but this wasn't the friend's place he was with that night, and it turned out when I went to trial, it was.
So he never, ever apologised to you and told you what happened that night?
No, and he also said when Maddie first went missing, when I went to trial, that Matt had gone missing before and we didn't know. We'd reported him to the police as a missing person. Mm. So he used that as an out.
in his alibis and said, well, Matt could have gone off somewhere else. That was what he was trying to argue in the trial.
So how did you feel at that first time? I mean, that even to me feels out of character.
It was. It was totally out of character. And we thought, oh, my God, something has. And the police, you know, they were really
concerned.
They were concerned.
And when he popped up, I mean, what was your reaction?
We were angry.
And also,
I think Matt was very embarrassed about it because he'd phone us. That he wouldn't come home, and he'd come home and get some stuff while we're not home. And then about after a month, I went to met up with him for lunch and thought everything was smoothed over. But he never told us he was living with a guy at first, and then later down track he told us. And then when we first met, Atkins didn't like him. And they come over for dinner, and as soon as dinner was over, he said, "Come on, Matt, we're going. I've got to go to work tomorrow." And you could tell Matt didn't want to go. And we said, no, Matt's... He said, no, Matt's coming. We've got to do something. Okay, Matt, go. And this month's down track, I put my foot down. Matty was having a good time, and you could tell he didn't want to go. And I just said, Dad, no, you go. I said, I'll take Matty home. And there was a bit of to and froing, and Matt ended up staying. Matt didn't want to go home that night. We took him home.
Very late. He was staying till.
And when we dropped him off, we never got invited into the unit, not once in that 12 months. And he kept saying to me, oh, you'll have to come over, Mum and Dad, and have a coffee. You'll have to come over. Rachel went over to see him once.
And Rachel's the best friend?
Yeah. Once, and Atkins got really shitty about it. So Rachel had to see him when Atkins wasn't around. And, you know, he just systematically cut him off from all his family and old friends. Yeah. And, like, we didn't know the group of friends he was hanging out with at ARC.
Imagine that. He's a legal adult at that stage. Yeah. And if we had said, Matt, you can't see this bloke anymore, he'd have said, Mum, Dad, get nicked. It would have made things worse.
For years I beat myself over that.
Oh, no.
God. Oh, no, I used to sit down and cry my eyes out. I said, I should have gone over to that unit and just pulled him back. You know, and people say, no, that wouldn't have worked. No, you would have lost him.
Would have stopped talking to you.
So I'm damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah. But we never thought it would end like this.
No.
No, it's just...
You can't foresee that.
Yeah.
So the next thing you know, you get a phone call from work.
We didn't know he was missing until Tuesday.
Right.
Because Matt worked Tuesday to Saturday. It was his working week. And he wasn't living at home, so we didn't know he was missing until his work called out home on the Tuesday to say, why isn't he at work? And they rang twice. Now, youngest son was homesick, so Faye rang to see how he was. He's mentioned in passing Matt's work's called. We rang Atkins and said, you know, where's Matt? He said, oh, we have a bit of a tiff and he hasn't come home.
I had to get Atkins' number from Pete, our son, and then Peter arranged with him. He was going to get off work early, Peter, and so was Atkins, and they were going to meet him up at Darlinghurst and go looking for him. At the last minute, Atkins pulled out. He never once helped look for Matt.
It wasn't until Tuesday evening that all friends were starting to get back to us and no one seen Matt.
Mm.
And then I rang Atkins and said, listen, we're going to go to the police station reporting missing. You're the last person to see him. And he was reluctant to go. I said, you're the last person. You make sure you're there. And he'd come to the police station. And we went to the counter at Southern Police Station and the constable asked us our name, date of birth and address. And he asked Atkins after us. And Atkins had a bit of paper and it's cleared across the counter. That our stuff already pre-printed on it for the policeman. Now, I wear glasses, but I can see more distant things. And I clearly saw the 6th of 4th, 63, which was his birthday. And at that stage, he was 44, and that was only 20. And he was telling all the young boys he was early 30s.
34, they thought he was 34.
Yeah.
Though he'd never let Matt see, apparently never let Matt see his driver's license or anything. So Atkins never once helped look for Matt. He went back to his unit and just sat there and stayed there. And, so he never once helped. He didn't put up any posters. And the funny thing about it was in the street where they're living in Tonkin Street, I used to mark, we'd put up posters all along that street outside his unit. We had a memorial, or pictures of Maddie and flowers and where are you sort of thing. Except for that one, all the others along the street were ripped down. We'd go back, they'd ripped down about 2 days later. We put them back up, go back.
Wow.
So you tell me how they were, why just outside there.
Yeah.
And another time when we first started doing that, there was police down at Cronulla. There was about six of them outside a known nightclubby thing down there. And we tried to get their attention. Mark just said, excuse me, and they ignored us. Mark said, excuse me, a bit louder, ignored us.
Nothing.
And so we yelled, excuse me.
Who's in charge here? I am.
And we said, oh, we just want to let you know that we're putting these posters up around Cronulla and our son's missing. And I can't think of his name now. The guy that was in charge looked at it. He said, folded it up, stuck it in his pocket. And he said, oh, you probably like that other guy that went missing down here. They found him dead in between two buildings.
So compassionate, aren't they, some of them?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The police said that to you.
The policeman said that to me, yeah.
Wow, God.
Yeah.
That's some, yeah, good and bad. We've seen both extremes in the police force through the whole investigation. Back to the Wednesday now. Yeah. We dealt with the police of Sutherland, detectives of Sutherland Police Station on the Wednesday by phone. And then on the Thursday afternoon, the investigation was transferred to Miranda, Oakley Command, new police station and the bigger police station. And they asked to come to interview at 2 o'clock. So we're there at 2 o'clock until about 7. It's a long while.
And we'd, unbeknownst to us, they had Atkins.
In another room
waiting.
About then. Yeah.
About then.
Because what had happened was when the interview was near concluding, they said, we can tell you now, we couldn't before, so in case it influenced what you were going to say, we found Matt's car. Which we didn't know at that stage.
Because there was a million
located,
questions.
At a park in Sutherland this morning, on the Thursday morning. There's no signs of blood or a struggle. Just Matt's car was parked, locked up like a spare car normally in a park. And any reason why we're there? And we said, we have no idea at all. But what had transpired, well, that's going with us first of all. Then on the next day, on the Friday, they said, we're going to involve homicide. We're not saying anything bad's happened yet, but we'll get a better investigation with the homicide involved.
My stomach just sunk then, and he's not my son, and I know how the story ends. How did you react?
No, that was the Friday. Yeah. And on the Saturday, the homicide detective we met on the Friday, and Rad detectives were at our front door on the Saturday morning, and they said, we've got to tell you we're no longer looking for Matt, we're looking for a body.
Oh, my God.
We're missing it with foul play.
They said that on your front doorstep.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Right, whole fly up. And it was, so they came in and we had a longer chat, but that's how it all started. When they found Matt's car, this was the breakthrough. In the back of Matt's, when his boot of the car was received from Bunnings, containing a thumbprint. And the back of the car was cleaned out, and so they went to Bunnings straight away when they found the car and looked at the CCTV footage from Bunnings. It was very high quality. They show Atkins arriving at, I think it was 12:04 on Sunday,
empty handed,
and leaving about 10 minutes later with a mannequin cloth tape.
12:04 on Sunday afternoon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so from that, they asked Atkins to come down to the police station on the Thursday afternoon. And he said, look, I'm working at Glendenning, out near Penrith. I'll be a while, but that's I'll come there. I said, that's fine. As long as you come straight here, that's fine. Atkins didn't know police were already outside his workplace in an undercover car. And he's working at North Bend, not Glendenning. So this is his first lie. Another lovely lie. And they watched him follow him back to, rather than going straight to the police station, went straight to his unit at Cronulla. And there's police at the unit waiting for him. When he saw the police there and police get out of the car behind him, they say he almost collapsed on the ground. They had to help him to the ground.
Why did he hide his phone?
Whose phone did he hide?
Matt's in his own car, in Atkins' own car, under the carpet. And he'd been checking it when us had been, Mark and I and his friends, he'd been checking the messages. He'd been turning Matty's phone on and off.
When the police seized Atkins' car, they finished their search and nothing untoward in Atkins' car, yet they heard a buzzing sound. What is that? They couldn't work out with maybe
the
alarm going off.
The car's
so they undid all the battery terminals and they thought, well, it's still going. And what is it? And they started going, hearing the sound or feeling this vibration, and there was a vibration under the carpet on the foot in the footwell, a passenger side of the car. It went under there, and here's Matt's phone. So Atkins had Matt's phone all week, as his face said, checking it and seeing what was going on.
And they pinged it going past Tower on King George's Road.
At Hurstville. So one of the days he's actually had Matt's car on, Matt's phone on, whilst he's going to work.
So can we go back slightly to what actually happened now you know?
All right.
What actually happened? Saturday night they went to Ark.
Yeah, they went to Ark at North. They went to Ark a little early. They get some sort of a wristband or a stamp, which is because it's very cheap being to Ark early in the evening.
They go before.
They will go get their stamp and then go home to Alexandria and spend some time there with their friends, and have your drinks and chill, and get back to Ark later in the evening when it's a lot dearer. They've already got their stamp, so they don't pay anymore.
Peter, our eldest brother, was there. He was at
eldest son.
He was at Alexandria with Maddie. Wow. So they went back, and Peter got gone somewhere else, and Matt had gone to Ark with Atkins. They're saying that they'd had a fight at Ark because Maddie wasn't with Atkins, and Atkins, there's text messages going, "Oh, sorry, baby. How many times do I have to say sorry?"
Who said that?
Atkins. Peter went, and Matt was still at Ark, and then there's a clear CCTV footage of Maddie putting his shirt on,
yes,
leaving Ark, and Atkins tried to say that he was drug affected, couldn't walk, he was tired, he was falling asleep,
He crossed the road quite easily, no issues at all.
And then they sort of seemed to go different directions.
Well, the police made the point in the inquest that when they left Ark, it was clear that the two of them didn't look, although they left at the same time, they weren't walking together. And that was while they had Atkins gaining distance, so he wasn't getting away from her, the way it looked.
Yes.
And the car was parked in a laneway nearby to Ark, and if I'm not mistaken, without the transcripts, they left Ark at about the first time, just after 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Roughly, and then Atkins came back to Ark shortly after to sell drugs to another contact there. And this is clear outside the club. Again,
there was
on the footage,
police in the inquest that saw this person.
This take place. And this person's a friend of Atkins and to Mac to a degree as well. And Atkins sold some drugs to him and then went back to the car. About an hour transpires before they actually leave the area. And then after they've left the club, left the car on the way home, one of Matt's friends is talking to Matt via SMS, and Matt says along the lines of, the fucking cunt's making me go home. He didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
And his mate answered back, "Oh, look, mate, you'll be okay, it's all right." And a bit later, Matt says, "He's got to fucking get over himself."
And
a bit later, his friend answered, but that message, fucking get over himself, is the last message ever sent.
After the break, the Leveson family makes it to court, but faces a very intense defence. Coming up on Australian True Crime, the search for Maddie. But first, what did the Leveson's life turn into right after that day in the doorway of their home when homicide detectives told them they were no longer looking for Matt but for his body?
Next minute, homicide are off the case. The crime manager down at
Miranda
wants the case, so he told homicide to...
Well, what's the difference between homicide and crime manager?
They're more experienced. Homicide are specialised in homicide.
Right.
Crime managers aren't.
It's the local area commander. So what happens, this is our understanding. There's a lot of chest posturing going on among the police force.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, homicide, when a murder occurs, were brought in to consult on a case. And if the local area command said, no, we can do this, we don't need you, they would go and be left to the local area command. Now, we don't know if it's through Matt's case or other cases or a combination of cases, but now if homicide say, "We want this case," they get it. We didn't know how poor the investigation was. We never knew who was in charge formally. This new guy came in, and we believe he came from gang crime. And in that area, many of the victims themselves are also criminals. That's how we felt.
That's how he treated
us. It's the first time that we felt the police force and us were no longer on the same side.
Oh, my goodness.
It was just horrible.
So you're just a lovely family who are dealing suddenly with the fact that your son is missing and presumed dead.
Mm.
And you can't... You have this combative relationship with police.
That's the start, yeah.
And he was this... detective was really horrible. He said to me that it was Matt's lifestyle that had him murdered.
Oh, my God.
The police at the time, because it was just before Maddie's 21st, on his birthday, they sent the hat around, and we came home and we found these beautiful flowers on our doorstep with a cart.
What a lovely thought.
that they were thinking of us and that. And when he found out about that, he said to me, he said, they shouldn't have done that. It was unethical. And now every family that walks through the door, they're going to have to do the same thing. I complained because I was really intimidated. And I said I didn't want him anywhere near us. And we didn't know at the stage that he was heading it because nobody would tell us who was in charge. And then they said, no, he's not to be in the room with you, that's fine. And we get called down there about a week later and he's in the room. And I said to the other detective, I said, he's not to be near me. He said, and he wouldn't tell him to leave. And then he was just bombarding me with questions and everything else and being really, really horrible. And he wouldn't leave. He just wouldn't leave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It wasn't good for quite a while. We complained and complained bitterly, and eventually they changed the detectives, brought in a new lady who grabbed the investigation by the throat and shook it to pieces and moved on from that and did a great job.
When was that? How long after?
Good question. Now, Atkins was charged. Matt was killed September 07. Atkins was charged in August 08. So the new detective came. Detective new one came on. It would have been early 08, maybe. Wow. I'm guessing February, March.
And what had happened to, excuse me, when they had first gone missing, they wouldn't take, I said, oh, Jason saw an incident between Atkins and Maddie at a 21st 2 weeks prior where he got aggressive with him. He pushed Matt, and Matt nearly went to the ground. And they said, oh, no, he's too close. We don't need a statement from him. They didn't take a statement from Mark. When Simone
You guys know, so we'll follow what you say.
So when Simone came on the case, I mentioned to her what had happened. She said, oh, they've got a statement from Jason. I said, no, they haven't. So they didn't get the statement till a few months before the trial from both Mark and Jason. So when Jason took the stand, now we're talking about a boy who's just lost his brother and just turned 18 at the few weeks after that Maddie was murdered, gets on the stand and the defence just ripped him apart, called him a liar, said he was making it up to protect his brother, that incident at the 21st never happened. Even though a person from Matt's work got on the stand and said that Matt had told her about that and that he'd actually taken Maddie out the front of the club and either pushed him into a brick wall or a bush, he couldn't remember which one, and Matt was shaken by it. And the defence just ripped the boys apart.
And the imagery of you guys searching for Matt's remains is very powerful, and whenever I think about your story, that's what comes to my mind.
What we did, we tried to do it in a scientific way. For the police, we start off with a police timeline. They had a timeline for which I got from the police. They'd done for the first week from Matt leaving the club to the Friday morning at the end of the week, and I wanted less than that because I wanted to focus on what I call the disposable timeline. So I wanted from leaving the club to when Atkins got to his workplace at Monday morning. Also, Matt was pretty pedantic with his car. When you go and get fuel, he always reset the odometer. So we knew he bought fuel on the Tuesday, but not from the credit card. The police took so long to get credit card statements. We didn't know the time, just the date.
But we knew it was Tuesday. Figured out too that Atkins must have refilled it.
Potentially too.
Because the kilometres used from the tank, the amount of petrol it was used was wrong. So Mark had to factor that in because I sat in the car and I knew damn well Matt wasn't the last one driving the car because had the same distance from the seat. I was like in a lounge chair, just about lying down, and my feet were about that short from, very short from the clutch. And then I saw the petrol thing, and I thought it hasn't been reset.
We were convinced Atkins used Matt's car to go to Bunnings as well, and we put all those in, and we were left with an amount of unaccounted for kilometres. That was our search radius. Half that was our search radius. Then we had the times when Atkins' movements couldn't be accounted for. So we tried to use that to sort of think, what can you do in that time? Where could you go? And that led us to the National Park and Kurnell Peninsula. We also went to the point where we got data from the Bureau of Meteorology so that we knew that the night Atkins exposed to Matt, it was a 7/8 full moon, very low cloud cover, and in the low 20s. So it's a nice night to be out in the bush. And a nice bright night too, to be out in the bush. So we went driving ourselves about 2 o'clock in the morning. to do reconnaissance at different times. Mm-hmm. So we go out and say, well, what can we see at these times? We're looking for basically where you can get a car off the road so it's secreted to a degree and we can penetrate the bush to take a body in there.
But we think, well, my gut feeling is that he went out, well, Matty was dead, laying in the unit, went out and went, maybe at the time he got the Matic before that, then down to the national park, because he reckons he didn't, but to fluke where he put Matty, because if he'd gone so many feet one side or the other, he would have hit rocks.
Rocks and roots.
And to know exactly there that was going to be digging stuff.
At this spot, in those conditions, because of the heavy canopy of trees above, you still can't see the ground.
Mm.
You still can't see it. Now, he claims he had no torch and no help. But to dig with the mattock, you must take sequential swipes at the ground to make progress.
Right.
And if you can't see the ground, you can't do it. So, again, he's lied about either being alone or using a torch because it's just not possible.
It's not possible by yourself, I don't think. I think he's had help. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. Either that or he's had a torch and he's had a shovel as well, though he only reckons he had the mattock.
Question's unanswered. Now, Atkins went to Bunnings to buy a mattock and cloth tape.
Mm.
Why?
Mm.
Why? Why did he buy a shovel?
Yeah.
Why not a mattock and shovel? A rake? And why did he buy only a mattock? It's unanswered. You can speculate. Did he know where he was going and knew what he needed to dig that spot? Was it just, again, random luck? We don't know.
What has he said in the end? Where are
not
we at
much.
And how have we gotten there? So we went to trial in August of 08?
Yep.
Yes, August 08.
What happened?
6-week trial.
Okay.
Matty was overseas to pay back Atkins to teach him a lesson. He started up another little business.
Is that what he reckoned?
This is what he's... Atkins never took the stand. This is all through the defence.
What happened back in the trial, the defence counsel, there was no defence case at all. All the defence did was try and... speculate and create confusion with the prosecution case.
So that was his role. Their defence was that he's not even dead.
That's one of the things that's wrong.
He almost said that he was taken up by the aliens. He didn't say that, but it was almost
it could have
like
gone
that.
It could have gone that far. So, his defence counsel, we were told by the support staff, the DPP, by the police, by many people around the court, that, look, you're the victims of the deceased, so there's no way they'll attack you because you've already gone through enough trauma. That's just not ethical, not good form.
Wrong.
Well, this arsehole ripped into us, or tried to.
The defence counsel?
Well,
yes.
You bet.
Really?
Miserable piece of shit this bloke was, yeah.
He told me that Matty was born on the 12th of October. I said, no, Matty was born on the 12th of December. No, 12th of October. No,
what?
12th of December. And then he goes, oh, well, there must be a typo. You didn't know your son. He lived a double life.
Oh, my God.
You know, I said his eyes were blue, bluey green, depending on what he wore, which they were.
Yeah, mine are. Depending on what I wear. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You don't know your son. Because I didn't know him in... centimetres, I knew him in feet and inches. And he said, oh, you had a terrible relationship with your son. You're always fighting. This is through Atkins. We were fighting.
His friends testified to the contrary.
So I get off the stand all upset.
So after the 6 weeks, we had about 5.5 days deliberation with the jury. And after being out for about a day, they came back and said, well, less than a day. They said, Your Honour, we can't reach a verdict. He said, you're kidding. Get back out and do your work. And they got stuck in it again. And then on about day two or three, it would have been, they came back in and said, look, Your Honour, can you give us in layman's terms, the difference between murder and manslaughter?
Okay.
And the judge said, yes, it's easy. So it's the intent part. With murder, obviously you intended to cause serious personal harm or kill the person.
It's an interesting question, given that the defence didn't even offer up an alternative way.
And we all thought, police included, well, that's good. That's the way they're thinking. That's good. Okay, so off they go again. And then about another day and a half goes by, and they come back and say, Your Honour, we still can't reach a verdict.
They want to know what reasonable doubt was.
I'm sorry, you're right. They said, Your Honour, can you define for us what's reasonable doubt? And he said, well, the High Court tells me I can't. It's what you think it is. You know, let's know. Within about half a day of that, they came back with an answer. And they all walked in, and we're in there first door. They all marched in. They wouldn't look at us.
No, not one wouldn't look at us.
And Atkins' counsel had gone to a new trial. He left as well. But his assistant was still there. His sister was still there. And she was with him. And they stood and they announced not guilty to murder and then not guilty to manslaughter. And the look of horror and shock on the judge's face, on his assistant's faces, one was actually tears in her eyes. Atkins' solicitor, she had her mouth just dropped open. She was shocked as well.
And he stood there. No emotion.
Telling you what was happening, there wasn't an emotion at all. This is a, from left field. I say that face all the time too. Think back. What if we'd had a guilty verdict?
Mm.
What would have happened? Probably still be in prison, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Would we have Matt back? Probably not. So our goal was to get Matt, not to get him. So in a way, that probably has helped us.
Because what happened next? So you got an acquittal, heartbreaking, but we still don't have Matt's remains. And so you guys are still searching.
That got heated up. And also too, we had this one guy who, you know, he came out a few times looking with us.
Gave a lot of his time.
Got obsessive to the fact that every time I was home, he knew I was home. He was on the doorstep and wouldn't go. And he wanted to go out looking and going, no. Oh, well, I had a family I was helping down in Wollongong and I'm really pissed off because they stopped looking and all this. And we wanted to do it in our way, our time, by ourselves.
But this chap was so committed to finding Matt and to get Atkins. He really wanted to get Atkins. I don't know. We just suspect maybe there's history between him and Atkins. He was Gage too. Oh. So whether he was a past lover or they fought over somebody and he'd lost, I just don't know. But they appeared to be at history. That's my best guess. Okay. There's no evidence for that, but that's what I feel.
But then he was playing with us. He came into our office and he said he'd call the police. They'd found Matt down in the national park. They'd call the dogs in. The dogs were going at that stage. I didn't know how the dogs reacted. He said they're barking. They've called in other police and that.
So what do dogs do?
They sit quietly.
They sit, right.
Yeah, they indicate that the body's there and then they just sit and they don't move. And so he looked at me and I said, well, have they found him or not? Don't play with me. He said, well, they've called in the detectives are coming down. They've got the dogs down there. And the forensics, that's right. And anyway, we get a call from the police. Thank God they knew us. He told that he'd set up the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fake. He even bought a Matic.
The wrong brand Matic.
Oh.
And it was sitting near the grave.
Oh, no.
And then he tried to tell the police that he was working for us.
Oh, no.
And then he's the one set up a false Facebook account in Atkins' name.
He set up this fake Facebook account, and on there was a confession. He made contact with Atkins' ex-boyfriend, the one before Matt, and confessed to what happened to Matt. So the boyfriend
contacted me.
Us and police.
That Gary rings up all excited, or can't tell you what's going on.
There's a breakthrough,
but it looks like we've got him now. We've got him.
Sit tight.
12 months later, we get a phone call.
Well, no, but before that, this breakthrough in entailed police going overseas for a period and getting details from another country and where the boyfriend is. And
bringing back
finally they came back to Australia and said, we can tell you now what's happened, what the breakthrough is. And we said, well, please, we're in the car together. So it's all hands-free in the car. And Gary was there with a police profiler and other psychologists. And they were on hands-free. And so the four of us were talking. And Gary said, well, we can tell you there's been a confession on Facebook, on his page on Facebook. And we both said at the same time, but no, hang on, he hasn't got a Facebook page. And they said, yes, he has. He said, no, he hasn't. And they said, yes, and they quoted the name of that page. And, no, that's not him. That's this other person that's been out to get Atkins.
No.
And then on the other end, they were just silent.
Oh, no.
Just silence.
Because they'd brought the boyfriend out, unbeknownst to us, gone up and set him up with
all that work.
Yeah.
But finally, they trusted us enough to tell us because we could have helped.
And then, the plus was, didn't that piss them off?
Mm-hmm.
So they got more motivated.
Yeah.
And then that led up to the inquest starting in December 15 when that kicked off. And
December 2015.
Yeah, that's right.
first time we have heard in detail about how Matthew Levison died. He's the young man who vanished more than a decade ago and whose body was only recovered when his lover struck a deal with police that gave him immunity. Today the coroner heard what Michael Atkins told police. Now he insists it wasn't murder and he only dumped his boyfriend's body because he was ashamed. Melinda Nusifora reports.
It was physically painful for the Levison family to hear. Mother Faye Levison sobbed and rocked in her chair as the coronial inquest into her son's death heard details of Matthew's final hours.
Can you believe anything that that cretin says? He knows what happened to Matt. I don't believe what he said happened to Matt.
Michael Atkins was the last person to see Matthew alive when the couple left a Sydney nightclub almost a decade ago. Last year, he told the coronial inquest he had nothing to do with his former boyfriend's disappearance and suggested Matthew could be in Thailand. But later, when he was granted immunity from prosecution, he agreed to tell police what happened and lead them to where he dumped the body. Homicide Chief Detective Gary Jubelin told the inquest today that Atkins gave evidence that Matthew died from a drug overdose. He said the pair had a fight at the nightclub and slept that night in separate rooms. He said when he woke up the next day, Matt was dead. He saw there was a bottle of drugs in the kitchen and assumed it caused Matt's death. Atkins says he waited for hours until it was dark, put the body in Matt's car, dug a shallow grave and buried it in bushland south of Sydney. He had concerns for his reputation. He was the older partner of a younger male. He had concerns of what people might think. He also said he didn't want his mother to know he was gay. The inquest also heard for the first time how Atkins led police to the gravesite. He was hypnotised twice to help him remember the exact location and was even allowed to drive Matt's car to help him retrace his steps. Detective Jubelin said police tried to create a relaxed environment to help Mr. Atkins, one which was free from police pressure. He was also given a 70-kilogram mannequin to carry into the bush to reenact the crime. When asked if he thought Michael Atkins had help, Detective Jubelin answered, "No, I think he was acting alone," which means no one will ever be held legally responsible for Matthew's death. Melinda Nusifora, 10 Eyewitness News.
The boys had their mobile phones. They were watching on their mobile phones, Channel 7 and Channel 9 news of the police chopper following police cars through National Park. You know, could this be the search for Matt Levison's remains? And you know, we went down that afternoon and the crime scene search is on looking for Matt.
Wow.
Yeah, and Atkins has been there.
But with that induced statement, the most hurtful thing in that, he refers to Matt as it.
Right,
I buried it to get rid of the problem.
Yeah, I hope the problem would go away.
I hope the problem would go away by burying it. And every time he mentioned Matt, it was it. Now, this is somebody he loves so dearly and he's got a big void in his life. It's just, it took me 5 attempts to read that statement. I just couldn't do it. Because every word I'm reading, I'm just saying it's lies. You know, it's just...
We're in National Park digging the crime scene. On the second night of this dig, we had a little bit of rain. Not much, a little bit. Of course, this site had been dug previously, that's what, 6 months prior, it was a bit boggy. So the backhoe they were using, on a steeper section, his wheel started spinning. It was under like it was going to tip over on the police. So they stopped him straight away and they couldn't get out, so they brought in a commercial chap to get this backhoe out. The commercial guy was far less tree-friendly than National Park staff. And that was the telling point because on the last day,
starting to pack up.
I was putting our chairs in the car and putting things away, and the commercial chap and the detective was with him. Let's pull that palm out. And didn't think twice, and it came straight away. And they pushed it aside. I just said the feigned passing. That's a nice palm.
Because they had to stop before he swung it around on the bucket.
That's a nice shaped palm.
That's a lovely palm. It'll look good in the backyard.
And they put it down, and they kept digging. And within moments after that, they called across Gary Jubelin.
Who's he now?
He's our chief inspector. He was in charge of the investigation. Next thing, Gary walked over and said, "We've got him.
Oh,
we found
him." Oh, my
God. It was under that palm. Yeah, Matt actually fed that palm as he decomposed over the years. And that's where he was.
And a lot of people would be consumed by bitterness after all of the experiences that you've had since Matt started a relationship with this guy, really. Yeah. How do you, I mean, are you, I guess is my first question, although I feel as though you're not, just having spent a few hours with you. And secondly, how are you not?
I am.
You consumed with bitterness.
I don't have show it. I am. I wasn't even dead.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, if I did that or arranged to have it done,
yeah,
I'd be down at his level.
The people,
and then you'd go to jail because,
I'm not doing that.
His life would be ruined.
Yeah.
That's people say it to Mark and I. If that was me, we would have had him. We would have killed him. Yeah. Or had him killed. And I said, yeah, but that brings us down to his level. Mm-hmm. Then we've got to live with the fact that we've ruined each other's lives and our boys. We've got to think of our other two boys. Mm. I don't know if we didn't have another two boys, would things have changed?
Yeah.
But we've got to think of them. I've lost one son.
Mm.
I don't want to lose the other two.
And they've lost a brother.
They've got their own way of coping, and their lives have been ruined for life. Mm.
I'm happy this day on the podcast. You know, I've had offers.
Mm.
People I don't even know, and people I know have rung me and said, look, this is going to be done. I said, no, that's, we want him alive because he knows where Matt is, and we're not going to come down that level. So, people office to this thing. I said, no.
I think the difference is we've got consciences, and I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. I'd be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life. I wouldn't be able to operate. I mean, it's bad enough now. People say, oh, you're strong in that. We put on a mask. We put on a mask and we go out to the world, you know, and I can say that we go on holidays, yes, but when we go on holidays, I always feel guilty because we're having a good time. Matt wasn't afforded that. Mm. His life was cut short. I see his friends get married, have babies. Matt didn't get any of that.
And we're saying, what would we be doing now? You know, what would, that's what is my closing
what would he look
to
like?
Mm. You know, we are, how's work going? He plans holidays. Who knows? What have you been doing right now? He looked at perhaps going to the UK to do some work. That was in the last few weeks of his life. He was making inquiries there. So it never happened.
But even today, we went down to a little coffee shop down the road here, and we walked in there. It's full of gay guys, and they're sitting around talking, having breakfast, and you look at them and you think, that could have been Matt. You've got to face it. I mean, Matt wouldn't want us to be unhappy. He'd want us to live life, but at the same time, as a mother, and you'd understand this, you'd give anything for your child. Yeah. You know, if I could have died instead of him, I would have. And actually, it's cruel because I shouldn't be here. I beat the odds. I was given 2%, 3% chance of survival 13 years ago.
From major cancer.
And I survived, and then 12 months later, God takes my son. You know, I've lived my life.
God didn't take your son.
You know, why wasn't it me? If I could have died on that upper rain table and Matt could have stayed, I would have had it that way. So life is unfair, but you've got to make the best of it.
It's an odd thing too. It's, we try and look at the best of every situation as well, because Matt's gone, we've met the most amazing people as well.
We've made the most amazing friends who've become our dear friends, and friends that we thought we'd have for life would stand by us after a couple of years. Oh, you should be over it. Move on.
Or others we thought were friends as well, they'd see us in the supermarket on the street and they'd change aisles across the road.
It polarises you, it really does.
And there's nothing you can say because it's unusual, but at least be there for the person. That's the message. Just nothing you say can say make better.
Just presence.
Just be there for the person. There's a lot that have gone, but many more better friends, better new friends.
Mm.
We call that homicide friends.
Homicide.
Yeah, a lot of our friends have lost somebody too.
Mm.
And you can talk freely to them. You can be yourselves. You can have jokes that people haven't been through what we've been through. Might think they're black jokes. Yes, they are black jokes.
And they get it because they've been there.
The beautiful large fern that Matt's remains were found under in the Royal National Park south of Sydney was replanted in Faye and Mark Leveson's backyard, where it's thriving in their loving care today. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, and of course thank you to Mark and Faye Leveson for sharing their story. You can show them your support by liking their Justice for Matthew Levison Facebook page. And of course, feel free to send them messages on our socials and we'll definitely pass them on. They're obviously beautiful people and they really do appreciate every bit of support they receive.